This is Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
Welcome to the MMA Report Podcast interview edition for Sunday, August 30th, 2020. Of course, I am Jason Floyd of the MMA Report Podcast. Of course, every Wednesday, I am here with Daniel Galvan to talk about the latest news and notes going on in the world of MMA, the ability for us to kind of give our opinions about what we're seeing going on in the mixed martial arts community. And on that show, I always talk about, if you ever had any ideas that you want to hear on the podcast, just let me know. And got to give a little hat tip to one of my listeners, Joe, who had reached out to me and said, hey man, could it be possible for you to put all your interviews on the podcast feed? And that's exactly what this is going to be. Every Sunday, I'm going to put out the MMA Report interview edition, where you're going to hear the interviews that I have posted over the last week over at themmareport.com. Also on the MMA Report YouTube channel, of course. So if you want to see these interviews in video form, go over to the MMA Report YouTube channel, hit that subscribe button, and like the videos, man. It really does help me out a lot, especially with subscribers. Really does help me out a lot. So a great way to show your support for myself and what myself and Daniel do here at the MMA Report. And coming up on this edition, the inaugural edition, I guess I should say, of the MMA Report interview edition, you're going to hear four interviews that I have posted over the last week. You're going to hear my conversations with Joe Selecki, Natan Levy, Kama Worthy, and Cody Brundage. Joe Selecki coming off that win against Austin Hubbard at the Vegas Fight Night card, just over a week ago now. You hear about Natan Levy talking about his win in LFA, a fight that he had to weather a lot of adversity in that fight. You could definitely make the case that maybe the referee could have come in and stopped that fight at some point in the second round, but he's able to survive, goes off to win a majority decision. So you hear my conversation with him. Then you hear my conversation with Kama Worthy, who's set to step back inside the octagon, I believe, this coming up week. However, I know there was a report from an MMA Junkie reporter that noted that his fight against Osman Adetar was being moved to September the 12th. As a recording of this podcast, I reached out to Worthy's people. I haven't got a response back if that report is true or not, but I had a great conversation with Kama Worthy. I always love talking to Kama about a wide range of topics, so that'll be there. And also, the final interview will be with Cody Brundage, who is going to be a part of Tuesday's Dana White Contender Series. I've had a chance to get to know Cody over, I would say, the last year, 2 years or so. He's made his move out to Factory X, so that conversation, a little bit about that. But first off, we're going to start the interview edition off by letting you hear my conversation with Joe Selecki. Of course, coming off that first round submission win against Austin Hubbard, he is now 2-0 in the UFC. Of course, got into the UFC last year after getting that win against James Wallace on the Contender Series. That was by submission as well. And I'll tell you one of the stories, but you know, the story behind the interview is we had set it up, and probably about, I don't know, about 2 or 3 hours before the interview was about to take place, his PR guy, Ed, reached out to me and said, hey man, we may need to postpone Joe's interview. I'm like, oh, cool, no problem, no worries, you know. And he says the reason being is that Joe's wife may be going into labor. And that is, it did not happen when we did the interview. And I hadn't reached out to Joe to see if his, you know, I know he had told me that basically, you know, the baby's going to come at any moment now. So he had said that right when he got the call that day, was he was at training, wife called him, and he went right back home, then went to the hospital, and the baby did not come that day. So just a little story behind the interview, some of the things you maybe don't necessarily hear in the interview. But had a great chance with Joe Selecki, and our conversation starts off with Joe. I asked the simple question. I said, you know, hey, you had this great win, but what did you love and hate about your performance? Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who's coming off a win this past weekend at UFC Vegas number 7, Joe Selecki. Joe, appreciate the time, man. Congratulations on the victory. I'm sure you've gone back and you've probably watched that fight, countless amount of times over the past couple of days. Like, what do you love and what do you hate about the fight?
I think I love that I got to use a little bit of my striking. I hate that I took the back standing. I know that can wear my legs out sometimes, and I still did it anyway. But I think it was a calculated risk because, you know, I felt the speed difference, and I felt his power. You know, he did hit me once with like a little jab or a little check hook, and I kind of just felt like even if my legs weren't under me as well and I couldn't move as fast in the second round, that I felt comfortable being in the pocket trading, like planting my feet and using my boxing close range. So I think it was a calculated risk, but there's always things I'm not going to like. That was about it, though. You know, there wasn't a whole lot to take away from it. I picked some negative things I'm going to work on. But other than that, I'm just glad I got to show what I can do on a main card. I think it was super, super lucky how it played out. I had that happen earlier in my career sometimes with, like, maybe the wrong opponent at the wrong time. Like, I almost debuted against somebody that's in the UFC now. I can't remember who. And for some reason, ended up being a different guy. It's just like, things always seem to fall into place for me like that, where I end up bumped to a main card or a better opportunity opens up here. And I just kind of take it in stride. So I was pumped about that for sure, that I actually got to introduce myself to some mainstream fans.
In terms of a calculated risk, how do you manage whether or not in a fight you take that calculated risk or not? Is it as simple as it's just a feel?
I think so. I think you go with your gut first and then correct it. You know, that's how I always try to grapple when I was competing, and now it's how I try to fight. You know, I came out and winged that left hook right off the bat, and same thing. If I would have got countered, I would have just had to calm down and correct it. So I'd rather go with my gut first than hesitate. You know, I think on his side of things, he was hesitating a little bit. He didn't really commit with that first kick. And as dumb as it was, him missing that first kick was enough for me to go, oh, I have my range and the speed, so I'm going to take off. And if I was wrong, I can always correct it unless I got knocked out. But I'm not scared to lose. You know, I get very nervous about losing because I'm a competitor. But I spent so much time losing as a little kid in jiu-jitsu competition and stuff. I'm not scared to lose, so I'd rather go for it and then have to make the adjustments. And for me, like kind of saw in the back, like just breathe and trying to keep a calm face and take time to think is the best way. I can slow it down. And what I was really debating on the back was, do I need to drop off of here and try and get back on a double, which we do sometimes from training. I'm already behind. I'm dropped back to a body lock from behind and then circle around front and double leg him down. So all of it was being considered. I just went with my gut, and it felt like I could get the finish.
And, of course, you get the finish there. You get the win. I know this week, potentially, your baby's going to be here this week. So as you think about what last week was like for you, you know, John's fighting in Bellator on Friday night. Were you more nervous watching him fight on Friday as opposed to your own fight?
Oh, yeah, I think so. It's just I always get like that. Even with students at jiu-jitsu tournaments and stuff, I get more nervous for their matches than I do for my fights, even though I get very nervous for my fights. But I know how, like, if it doesn't go my way, A, it's on me. I can live with that. And B, I know how to handle losses and bounce back. I know I'll be in the gym Monday. I never want to see people get discouraged. You know, John's not like that, obviously. We've seen him bounce back for rare few times he has lost. But it's just when you spend so much time with somebody and you see how hard they work, and when somebody's such a good person, especially like John, and he's one of my closest friends. So I want to see him do well. And it was amazing to see him do so well. And then, as irrational as it was, I was watching him like, yeah, I can do that, even though I'm not a national champion wrestler or, you know, the level black belt he is. But it was just drawing confidence from seeing somebody I work alongside so much and try and follow his footsteps was I drew confidence from it. But I hated not having him there because, you know, it ended up being fine. My head coach, Jeff Jimbo, is so amazing. And I could hear him clear as day as well. But, you know, I always hear John, too. So it was just, you know, kind of putting all my eggs into hearing Jeff Jimbo in the corner. And he's such a good coach. It worked out perfect. But hated missing John there.
Yeah, I was going to ask how that worked out, because obviously in the COVID restrictions of pandemic fighting is the way I best call it. It's not like, you know, John could get on a plane in Hartford on Saturday morning, come to Vegas and corner you. So how did that work between, you know, you and him in terms of how you guys were going to work corners on each night?
Yeah, well, the funniest part was, you know, John usually uses the same two cornermen. And last time he had our head coach, Jeff Jimbo, as well. But Jeff wasn't really traveling with everything going on until Scott took a fight. And the first time we fought Hubbard, John was going to go with me. And Jeff's like, you know, I don't feel like you need me for this. I feel like we've got a good game plan. You're in good hands. And then I called Jeff as soon as I got the fight and was like, hey, John's fighting that weekend. If it's okay. And he's like, absolutely. But before that, I got to a point in training camp where I was like, oh, I think I'm just going to end up fighting in fall. They have nothing for me. And John was like, hey, you know, do you want to come be the third and hang out in Connecticut and corner? And I was like, dude, what an honor. I get to corner, you know, one of my, you know, he's like my big brother in fighting. Like, I just love him so much. I was like, heck yeah, and it'll be my deload week. I've been in camp for 20 weeks, and I'll get to eat some good Connecticut food, and I don't have the stress of fighting. This is great. And then next day, my manager's like, hey, Hubbard, on the 22nd, I was like, oh, God, not only do I not get to go to Connecticut, enjoy a great trip, and watch my buddy kill it, but I don't get to have him in my corner. This stinks. But it all worked out. You know, we just took it in stride. I had Jeff Jimmo. I had my boxing coach, who's like my rock. He's like my silent backer. You know, he always says his work's done the second we warm up. He doesn't really yell much in the corner. And then I have my training partner, Zach DeLeon, who's awesome. I talked about him a little bit in the post-fight interview. He's a law student. He came in as a boxer, and in like 2.5, 3 years has become one of the toughest jiu-jitsu guys, and he's almost impossible to take down, especially sparring big gloves. So I put him against a lot of the guys that I've trained with who are in the UFC and Bellator and bigger promotions and a lot of pros. So I had him with me. He's closer to my size. He was great. He knows my game better than anybody because he sparred more rounds than me than anybody. So we had a great thing going all week. It was, you know, we missed John, but it was great having these guys.
You know, in terms of what's next for you, obviously with, you know, the addition of a baby coming here at any moment for you and your wife, how does that alter when your next fight could be?
I don't think it does. You know, we're crazy in this house. It's chaos. We were living with my mother-in-law when I first started fighting as an amateur. And we're like, I think we're going to get a dog because my dog is a rescue. And like, they were thinking about possibly putting him down. And I was like, we don't have anywhere to live. My mother-in-law can't have a second dog. She rented the place. We're just going to get this dog. We'll figure it out. And then we got an apartment to live in. And then we found our other dog through my old bosses. And I was like, yeah, we'll take her in too. And like, we just take things in stride. We're crazy. We're chaotic. And we just figure it out. It's going to be the same thing with the baby. Like, I think people think it's going to be this dramatic, like, oh, you're going to stay home from the gym. It's like, no, she's going to come. And the second my mother-in-law gets here to help out or whoever's here to help my wife out, I'm going to get back to my normal schedule because that's what we got to do, you know? So it's not going to affect anything too much. I'm just glad I got to fight beforehand, so I don't have to worry about leaving like the next week or so. But I'm going to fight hopefully December is what I asked for. But if it's earlier, that's fine. I'm already back training. I was back at strength and conditioning today. I was at wrestling practice, and then my wife called with contractions, so I had to leave. But I'll be back in the gym tonight. I'll be back in the gym sparring tomorrow. I got a buddy fighting out of Myrtle Beach, going to make his pro debut, or it's his last amateur fight. I'm not sure what they ended up deciding, but he's a 55er, so he needs me. I'll be back sparring tomorrow with him if he comes down here, and then Saturday sparring with him. So full schedule. The only thing that's going to change is our strength and conditioning. Are we doing more strength work or more conditioning? Other than that, nothing's going to change.
Yeah, when we hyped on this call, when I saw your shirt, I bought that shirt for my wife because literally we joke everything we do is for our dog. Everything we do.
Good man. I love it. That's how we are. And that's the thing is, we just take it in stride. We packed up on a day's notice and, you know, driven up wherever, cities away with our dogs. Like, we're just going to take it in stride. We'll figure out the parenting thing. And I don't sleep a whole lot anyway. I'm a stress ball. So I have a feeling not much is going to change on that front.
Do you not sleep a lot during fight week?
No. Yeah, definitely not. Especially being on Vegas time. It was like, I would get up in the middle of the night, especially without my wife or anybody there, like just my teammates. You know, it was a living room and a kitchen, and then you go into two separate bedrooms. So I was making the joke of, oh, we're in the common area having a blast. What a fun fight week. I go in that room. Oh, my God. I didn't know I had so many demons. Holy cow. I was like, I had like the blackout curtains closed because I didn't want the sun to wake me up because it'd come through a little bit. So I duct taped them closed. It's a veteran trick. And then I would get in there and I would be like, as soon as my eyes would open in the morning, it'd be like 6:30, 7. I'd be like, oh, well, I'm up for the day because I got to go to the bathroom already. Just freaking out. So, yeah, I'm just like that. It is what it is. Fight week especially. But, yeah, it is what it is. So I don't think this baby's going to be much. I'm a night owl. And I have to get up early for training anyway. So coffee, man. Lots of coffee. I'll be good to go.
Of course, we look forward to seeing when next fight is. Good luck here with those late night wake up calls with the baby, because as you mentioned, not going to give you much sleep here. But Joe, appreciate the time. Of course, let me know anything for you on social media. Anything else you want to mention, man?
Yeah, I just want to thank everybody that supports me, man. I really think this fight was a turning point for me just in the support, because I've always had support from people, you know, tons. But I was saying in another interview is it's always been support of like, I'll throw you a bone, I'll buy a fight shirt or something like that, which it was amazing. But it was support from like friends and family. And even some people on Instagram, it was like, oh yeah, good win. I'll be watching in the future, see what you do. And for some reason, something about this fight, I don't know if it was the main card or maybe because of Hubbard's just such a stud, because he is, it went from like support to like fans. Like people were saying, oh my gosh, you're my new favorite fighter. Oh my gosh, I want to have you for a seminar. Oh my gosh, if you ever fight again, please, I've got to watch every single one of your fights. Or people were putting money down. Like, I think I really turned a corner there. So I just appreciate everybody reaching out. It was really, really amazing. I read all that. I tried to get back to most people, even if it was just liking their message. I tried to get back. I really appreciate it. Just my team. We talked about it a lot. Everybody at Jim O, absolutely amazing. Jeff Jim O is just a guru and just a true leader of men. Having him was just an amazing confidence boost, and I just can't wait to see where he can take my game. Chris Gow, my boxing coach, Zach DeLeon, main training partner that came out and cornered me. John Salter, just amazing in that fight. He just showed complete domination. I don't think people realize how good Andrew Capel was on the ground. That body type is the hardest type of guy. He was wiry and strong, and the dude was playing spider guard in MMA pretty much. It was amazing. So for John to just completely shut that down and put him away, I think that speaks volumes of just how amazing he is. And everybody at Fitness Edge MMA, and I keep forgetting just because I get ahead of myself, but John Hassett, my lifelong instructor, has been – he changed my life. I said it earlier in the week. I was like, I think halfway through the week when I was getting real nervous, I was blaming him for ruining my life because I was so nervous and just such a mess. And then by the end of the week, after I got my hand raised, I messaged him. I was like, dude, you changed – he was the first person in my inbox. He always is. He's amazing. And I was like – you know, earlier this week, I was hating you because you ruined my life and got me hooked on this jiu-jitsu thing and MMA thing. But now I thank you because I think I was truly born to be average. And because of the great people around me I met, at least in sports, I'd be able to become above average, you know. And it's incredible what they've done to me, all these coaches, Hudson Rose, just everybody. So, yeah, I just can't thank them enough. Everybody that reached out, supported me, and it's been amazing.
And there was my conversation with Joe Selecki. I really appreciate Joe taking some time out of his day, obviously, with the baby coming here any moment. But, you know, in terms of his fighting career, great win for him. And, you know, you hear him mention there in the interview, said that, you know, getting a lot more fans based on that performance, a great performance that he had against Austin Hubbard, of course. You know, Austin had come off that great performance against Max Roshkoff. And, you know, look, I probably, especially on the DFS show, I thought there was some value in Austin Hubbard, but man, that was definitely not the case. Great performance by Joe Selecki, and you know, we'll see when he does return back inside the competition. You know, he mentioned about later on this year, and you know, someone there at 155 pounds that we definitely got to pay attention to. The nice little run that he's been on. I mean, of course, we all know the UFC lightweight division is a stacked division. So, you know, right now it's when you talk about this era of pandemic fighting, there is just a lot of opportunities for fighters to take advantage of. And, you know, we've seen, you know, certain fighters be able to, you know, to fight multiple times already in 2020. You know, one of those fighters I think about is Yusuf Zalal, a fighter that I've had a chance to talk to on countless occasions. And, you know, he's a guy that's just is very active. I want to say he's going to get back inside the octagon in October. So, you know, right now it's a lot of opportunities, and especially when you look at these fight night cards and even pay-per-views that are happening in Las Vegas, where, you know, we're seeing fights fall off, you know, the week of the fight, hell, even falling off the day of the fight. We saw that, you know, last night at the fight night card where Ian Kutalabe, you know, once again tests positive for COVID. I am not a COVID expert by any stretch of the imagination. Wondering how could, you know, someone test positive a couple weeks ago, then test positive again. You know, I'm not a COVID expert, but, you know, that to me is something that's interesting, and I'm kind of interested to see kind of how that does play out as time goes on in terms of, you know, we'll see what happens there. You know, with Ian Kutalabi, you know, I tweeted that if I'm Ankalaev, I just move on from a rematch. I mean, the fight's now been canceled twice. I want to say it was MMA Junkie that maybe had a report saying that they were going to try to rebook that fight. I don't know, man. That's one of those ones. I just think that if you're Ankalaev and you're his team, I think you just move on and move on to something else, but we'll see what happens there. But let's move on to the next conversation I've had over the last week, and that is with Natan Levy. Undefeated fighter, trains out of Syndicate there in Las Vegas, was supposed to fight back in the beginning part of July at the LFA show, LFA 84. However, he was removed from the fight card. It was either weigh-in day or the day of the fight. I forget exactly which day it was, because he had been in contact with someone who had had COVID. One of his coaches was a COVID-19 positive. So he was pulled from the fight. So they rebooked the fight for August 21st at LFA 88 against Ben Lugo. Same opponent, and you know, you can go on Fight Pass, you can watch the fight if you didn't watch this fight card live. You know, I thought, first round went well for Natan Levy. Looked good. Second round, you know, gets caught, and then, I mean, man, it's you would not have blamed the referee if he would have stopped the fight. And even during this conversation, you're about to hear it with Natan, he even mentioned of like, hey, maybe I need to send that referee a present for allowing the fight continue. Because I said this last week, I said it on the Fight HQ podcast, I said it here on the MMA Report podcast, of I don't know what it is. I don't know if this is commissions telling referees to give fighters every opportunity, but for whatever reason, in 2020, referees are giving fighters every opportunity in the world to stay in the fight. And the referee in this situation, he gave Natan Levy every opportunity to stay in that fight, and that was Vance Werden, who was a referee in this one. And you know, it was great for Natan Levy. You know, he weathers that storm in the second round. I thought it was definitely a 10-8 round. Only one of the judges scored in the 10-8 round, which was kind of surprising. But then, you know, Natan Levy comes out and dominates in the third round, goes out there and gets a majority decision win. So he moves on. So here is my conversation with Natan Levy. We talked about how he was able to weather that adversity and also talked about some various other things. So here's my conversation with Natan Levy. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who's coming off a decision victory last week, LFA 88, Natan Levy. Appreciate time. I guess really the story line of the fight is the second round in terms of you had to weather some adversity in that second round, I guess is about the best way to put it. How do you describe the second round in comparison to the first and the third?
First of all, thank you for having me. Yeah, you know, I think they were a complete opposite. I think I pretty much dominated the first and third round. I think, you know, Ben was the most experienced fighter I ever fought. And by watching the fight now, you could tell that he knew how to take advantage of certain things that happened in the fight, especially when I got hurt with a right hand. Immediately followed up and got me hurt. In those moments, to me, you know, I was actually having fun. I was thinking like, oh, it's on, you know, the fight's on. And at some point I realized the fight is on, but it's pretty one-sided against me. So I realized I really had to do something and change what's going on, you know. I have some time missing. I was kind of like flashing in and out of it. But at some point I was on the ground and I saw some blood. Not too much, but just a few drops, like right next to my face, and I thought, like, that's my blood. It's not. I'm getting beat up. I gotta go, and I gotta stop having fun and do what I need to do to win.
When you go back and you watch the fight, you look at that second round. Is there a part of you go, man, I'm grateful for that referee for allowing me to continue to stay in the fight? Because I mean, look, even Pat Miletic on the broadcast mentioned, he's like, you know what? There might have been some referees that would have come in and stopped the fight. So from your aspect, and I do feel that, I don't know whatever it is. I don't know if maybe the referees have been instructed this by, you know, the athletic commissions, but it does seem like referees are giving fighters more opportunities to escape, you know, bad positions, bad adversity, whatnot. Is that kind of one of your takeaways from the second round? Like, man, next time I see that ref, I got to give him a thank you.
I got to send him a gift. I think he did really, like, he's the real MVP. You know, he saved the fight. Looking back at it, anybody can tell that it was the right call. But, you know, some people would say, oh, what if he would have gotten hurt? Then you got to blame the ref. But really, I think, yeah, I was out of it and I was confused and dazed and everything. But what really never happened is I think I never gave up. I was shooting. I was holding on to limbs. I was covering up. I never turned into a ball. I never gave my back. And I think I never showed anything that said I want out. But at the same time, some people will never look for a way out. I'm one of them. And I do think that sometimes refs should save fighters from themselves. But I think it was the right call. And I'm definitely thankful that he let me fight through it and show, you know, what I'm made of and push through. Because this really, you know, it's pretty much the worst situation you can be in an MMA fight. I mean, even getting flash knockout, you wake up after the fight is over. You can't really do anything about it. You got knocked out. But being that deep in trouble and having to fight your way out of it, I think that's kind of like your biggest worry as a fighter. And I'm glad I got there. I'm glad I pushed through. And that's something you can only know once you've been there. Everybody can talk, oh, I would have gotten up. I would never quit. I would never this. But until you're there, you can't judge and you can't say what you would do. And luckily, I got tested. And I'm proud of myself.
I want to ask about you're defending a submission in the first round. And you literally go upside down at one point. Is that just purely just like instincts of just trying to escape the hold? I mean, for people who didn't see the fight, I mean, literally you are head on the ground. Your feet are straight up in the air.
Yeah, you know, he got me in the guillotine, but I immediately went for the opposite leg side and tried to go for a Van Vloo choke. You know, I only had my striking coach there with me. We could only bring one coach. So I wish I'd have my jiu-jitsu coach or my MMA coach with me to maybe give me some fine-tuning with that during the fight. But I really felt like I didn't have it. And he started sweeping me. And I did what I know how to do, what I learned how to do, is like use my head as a post. And it doesn't matter if it's the head as well or just the head. You know, I do it all the time. I use a headstand to pass guard, to, you know, I got to go strong neck. So I just use it all the time. For me, it's really nothing crazy. Just something I do every day at the gym.
We mentioned, you know, about some things that didn't go the way you would like for the fight, but in terms of what went right in the fight, what are you happiest with?
First of all, my wrestling, yeah, it was a big key for the win. You know, I would have loved to do more ground and pound. I would have loved to do more submission attempts. But really, at some point, you know, I was very dazed and I felt like my health bar was running low and I had to keep him on his back more importantly than doing damage and having him get up. The thing about Lugo with the grappling, I don't think he has like a very high level wrestling. His jiu-jitsu it's decent. He's got some tricks up his sleeve, but I don't think it's a very high level jiu-jitsu either. The thing is, he just kept going, pushing off the cage with his feet, kept trying to get back up. Some people, you'll take them down, you let them get up, carrying your weight, put them on the mat again, let them get up with your weight, carrying your weight. But the third, fourth time you put them down, they're kind of tired, mentally broken, and they're not trying to get up anymore. Suddenly they're looking for submissions off their back. They're looking for jiu-jitsu sweeps, which rarely work. And they're looking to hit you from the bottom, and then you know you got them. But Ben was really doing all of them all the time, including still trying to get up, still pushing out the fence. So it was really, I never got to the point where I was like, I held him down, he tried and burst out, and now I can punish. He was always bursting out, always trying to get up. And at some point, especially end of the second round and third round, I knew I had lost some time. I knew something happened that I got rocked, and I just couldn't afford letting him get back up. I knew, you know, this is MMA. Maybe some fans will less like it. I was throwing some shots, but I wasn't throwing as much as I would have liked to.
now you're 5-0. You know, as you continue this progression in your martial arts journey, what's kind of next for you? I mean, is there a timeline of when you would like your next fight to be?
I'd love it to be this weekend. It's fun in there. I kind of miss the moment. I want to get back, travel back through time to that moment when I was in the cage, rocked, or between the, you know, the second and the third round, I gave him a big smile and he smiled back. And, you know, like, it was really a good time. And I want to do it again as soon as possible. I'm not going to spar for a month because of the shots I took. So I'm definitely not going to fight in a month. I would have loved to, but I just don't think, you know, it'd be smart. I'm not even going to run for a little bit just to not, hit the ground over and over again. So I'm just taking this week completely off. Maybe I'll do some stretching, then slowly get back to shadow boxing, drilling, wrestling, jiu-jitsu, and then I'll get back to Impact in a few weeks. So hitting pads, hitting the heavy bag, jumping rope, running, all of this. I'm just, you know, I would do it today if I could. I'd leave, open the door and start running. But my coaches told me not to, so I'm listening to them.
You know, since you trained there in Las Vegas, there is a lot of opportunities for Las Vegas fighters because for whatever reason, every time we've got a UFC card in Vegas, one, two, or more fighters fall off. So is that your mentality? Is that various reasons? But for you, is the mentality of, okay, when I'm ready to go, you know what? I'm keeping my weight low because there's likely going to be an opportunity. Good chance there'll be a 45 opportunity, maybe a 55 opportunity for you to get into the UFC. But is that really the mentality right now of like, you know what? When I'm ready to go, it's got to be about be ready because your manager could call you on a Thursday evening and said, hey, can you make weight tomorrow morning?
Yeah, exactly. For me right now, it really hasn't been like the usual path of after winning a fight. Usually I feel like a big way less stress, eating, enjoying a lot of food. And right now I'm enjoying some food. I'm eating a little bit of ice cream and I'm like, don't eat too much. You're going to hate yourself. Like I could say what I ate in the whole like 4 or 5 days since the fight. I would usually eat like the night after the fight. I've been a good boy with the food. But yeah, also just sitting at home, I'm kind of feeling like, sloppy. Like I really want to go out and train and keep doing what I was doing and I just can't yet, but I'm going to stay ready. You know, I'm taking this week as rest, because I have to, because I know if I don't, it's only going to make me things worse. It's only going to make me, not as good as I could be, and that defeats the purpose. So I'm going to take this week off and then I'm back to 200% of the training. If I can't do one thing, I'll do something else. I won't just be sitting on my ass, keeping the weight low. I'm already back on my diet pretty much. I have like a little cheat here and there, but I'm eating really clean, really healthy. And I can't wait, you know, whether it be LFA, Contender Series, anything, I'm just down. I want to keep going.
And we look forward to seeing when the next fight may take place. As always, man, I appreciate the time. Of course, let everyone know they can follow you on social media and anything else you want to mention.
People can follow me on Instagram at @NATAN_LEVY, Nathan Levy, and on Facebook, same thing, my Facebook page. And that's it. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. And hopefully we'll talk again soon.
And there was my conversation with Natan Levy, as always. Appreciate him giving me some time. Had a chance now to interview Natan a couple of times, and really great insight to hear him talk about how he was able to weather that adversity and ultimately get that decision win against Ben Lugo. And obviously, you know, a fighter you have to pay attention to. I thought it was really interesting of him talking about, even though there could be a great opportunity for him to step up on short notice to, you know, make a UFC debut, he mentioned about how he wants to, you know, rest his brain and rest his body a little bit. But obviously, I think if you see a fighter fall out during fight week for a UFC fight card in Las Vegas, to me, Natan Levy is probably someone you have to be looking at, because, you know, you look at Trevin Jones 2 weeks ago. This is a fighter who lives in Guam, trains in Guam. Say, you know what? I'm packing my stuff up. I'm going to Las Vegas, and I am going to sit there. And the whole reason I'm going to Las Vegas is the potential to get a short notice fight. And, you know, if you're Natan Levy, I think that's an opportunity that you have to think about as well. Now, next up, you're going to hear my conversation with Kama Worthy. Of course, Kama now 2-0 in the UFC. He came in last year in August, short notice, to take on a friend, a former training partner, Devontae Smith, and shocks the MMA world with that victory, as he was a massive underdog. He was over a 6-1 betting underdog in that, won a $50,000 fight night bonus with that, and then of course came back in June and at the end of June and got that win against Luis Pena. Once again, another underdog spot. You know, he had some, yeah, the second round wasn't a great round for him, but then comes back and gets a finish there in the third round, submitting Luis Pena. This is a guy that has been on an absolute roll. I mean, you think about, you know, this is a fighter who was 9-6 after losing to Kyle Nelson. Since then, he has not lost a fight. Has been on just an absolute tear, you know, over his last seven fights. And now he's got Osman Adetar. As I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, that this fight was scheduled to take place on September the 5th. One of the MMA Junkie reporters noted that they were hearing that the fight was being moved to September the 12th. Right before I started to record this podcast, I did reach out to one of these people to basically to see if that report was true. Haven't heard back yet, so not you know, quite sure if this fight has been moved or not. But you know, of course, he was supposed to take on Osman Adetar back in April, and I remember when that fight didn't come together, he had told me. He said, he goes, look, I want to rebook that thing. He goes, that's a fight that really interests me. And you know, in this conversation you're going to hear with me, I had with him, one of the things that really stuck out to me about what he said was of what he's expecting out of Osman Adetar. He said, he goes, look, this is a guy who I know is going to be aggressive, and I know he's going to bring the heat. And so this is going to be a fight that I'm really looking forward to seeing kind of how this plays out. But here is my conversation with Kama Worthy. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man says back inside the UFC Octagon, September the 5th, UFC fight night, as he gets his fight with Adetar. It is Kama Worthy. Kama, appreciate the time. I know this is a fight that even after it got canceled the first time, you're like, man, I want to run that thing back. What do you know more about him now as opposed to when this fight was initially scheduled?
Nothing. Nothing. I mean, I didn't get any like secret information or anything. Nothing really. It's the same scenario, same fight.
You think he knows more about you now, or maybe his thoughts of you are different?
I don't know. I can't really get into his head and know what he wants or what he's doing, but I mean, it can be, it can't be. It all just depends on how he's thinking.
You know, your last fight was back in the end of June. It feels like it was a while ago.
I know.
I just saw the date here on my other screen. I'm like, wow, end of June. I don't know. For some reason, I thought like maybe it was like 2 weeks ago or something. Like, does it feel that long?
No, I mean, like, I'm right back in the camp, so it doesn't feel. I didn't feel like I had any break or anything. I like recovered, got my body back to being healthy, and then got right back to training.
You know, of course, I guess there were some people who were surprised by how you got the win the last time. You know, they thought if you would get the win, it would be because of your strikes, but you know, it was a submission. Do you kind of feel like it's, you're kind of that now your opponent sees that and they're like, ooh, I don't know if we want to go to the ground.
No, I hope they keep trying to take me down, you know, Like, I hope I just keep getting taken for granted. I'm cool with that. That way I don't really have to do much if people keep underestimating what I'm capable of. I haven't been doing this for 14 years. <You know? laughs> So I just run with it that way.
Does it surprise you that people still underestimate you?
No, people aren't that bright. So the human race is not that smart of a, like, you know, like, we're not that, as a whole collective, we're pretty dumb. So no, it doesn't. I'm like, you know, people believe what they believe or what they think, or like, and then they can like go into some assuming things and stuff. So, you know,
does it ever bother you?
Nope. Like I said, it makes my fights easier. You know, like, oh, I think it's this, or I think that's that. I'm like, all right, cool. Like, or I think he's too old, or I think he's not this. And I'm like, it doesn't. As long as I know I'm putting the work in, then it'll come to fruition when we fight.
In terms of putting in the work, how has preparations been? I mean, obviously, gyms are somewhat getting back to normal, but how has your preparations been?
Oh, it's good, man. Like, I got right back where I left off for camp last time. Same guys, brought a couple of new guys. I'm going to a couple of new places, get some different working and stuff. But same type of preparation. I have decent, real good amount of training partners and stuff. At least like 5 or 6 guys to work with constantly, my coaches and stuff. So it's good.
You know, in terms of, you've been in this environment now, you know what to expect during fight week. Is there anything you'll change up this fight week after experiencing already?
No, not really. There's nothing like there's nothing really you have control over that you can really change. So not really.
Well, I know when, so when I talked to Eustace Law about it, when he was going to the second time there, he goes, yeah, my big lesson was bring an internet cable, because you can't depend on the Wi-Fi.
Oh, see, my Wi-Fi was good. I don't know. My Wi-Fi was good in my room. I don't know.
Yeah, because he was trying to play some games and, you know, wanted to, you know, get on the internet. And he's like, man, I just could not make the Wi-Fi work to where I could play in the games.
See, that's weird. My Wi-Fi was perfect. I was able to do social media and everything and, like, do my stuff and watch stuff and videos and stuff. There was nothing wrong with it.
In terms of Azatar, what are you expecting to see out of him?
He brings heat. He's an aggressive fighter. So I expect him to be aggressive. Like, I've never seen him not fight aggressive. So, like, he's going to always come forward. He comes forward. Like, he's smart. He's a smart kickboxer. Like, Moroccans have really good kickboxers. Him and his brother, they're really good. He has decent guys where he's working with and stuff like that. Like, Oz Marat, what's that guy from Canada? I know he trains them too. So he has decent guys. Nobody's as slick as me, but he has good guys that he's working with. So he's going to definitely be prepared and ready to bring the heat.
Is there a way to make a typical aggressive fighter into a passive fighter?
Yeah. I can't tell you.
You don't want to give away your game plan?
Oh, no. I mean, I can't tell you, but I do it all the time. Yeah. It's really simple. Like, you know, someone particularly aggressive to make them not so aggressive.
In terms of your key to victory, is it just mainly just be first? Is that about the best way to put it?
No, be first, be last, and be in between too. I mean, that's just how I approach fighting in general. I be first, I'm last, and I'm in between. So it's overwhelming. It's completely overwhelming at all times. Just try to be overwhelming.
Has that always been the approach, or did you grow into that?
No, I kind of grew into that. Like, I used to just apply pressure just recklessly, but now it's just overwhelming. It doesn't have to be power punches. I can find power punches whenever I want to. Like, I tell people, I don't hit hard at all. And people are like, well, I mean, I have 9 knockouts on my record, but I don't hit hard. But I do hit hard. It's just, I don't, like, try to hit hard, but I hit hard. You don't have to try to hit hard. You have your hand wrapped in a cast and these little leather things on me. I don't have to hit hard. You're going to hit hard. Your adrenaline's pumping through the ceiling, so I don't try to hit hard. But it still hurts when I hit because I'm still hitting hard because your adrenaline's amping everything up. But if you try to hit hard and then you miss, you're going to end up out of place and stumbling over and stuff and looking stupid, and you're going to waste too much energy. So I just don't try to hit hard. I just hit.
Do you remember when your approach changed? Was it something that happened in a fight?
No, I've always had that. It's just understanding when and how to use it. You know what I mean? It's like when you're playing a video game, you have this secret gun that you don't know how to use, and you figure out, like, oh, shit, I had this the whole time. I just didn't know how to use it. So now I just know how to use it. Is it always, like, will it make me, like, undefeated or unstoppable? No. Everyone has a plan until you get hit in the face, but it's something that I've adapted to.
Of course, it's just now, it was just almost a little more than a year ago that you made your way into the UFC, and we all remember how memorable a night that was for you. You were a massive underdog in that fight. As you think about the last year, how would you describe this journey over the last 12 months?
Fun, man. It's been interesting. A lot of stuff has happened. The world almost came to an end. Like, that's the thing. It's like, oh, this has been a crazy year. This, like, oh, a whole bunch has happened. Not just the two fights. There's been a lot going on. So, I mean, my family and everything, the gym, I moved my gym. Like, there's so much has happened in the past 12 months. So, like, it's a lot of growth, you could say.
You know, it's kind of weird because I'm so used to now watching fighting with no fans. So every time I see a fight with fans, I'm like, oh, that's what that was like.
Yeah, exactly. I was watching, there was a, what was on, that was no fans anyway. But I was watching the Francis Ngannou fight, like him versus Biggie Boy last night. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot that was, like, it just seemed like it was such a long time ago. But I forgot how long we've been without fans though.
Some fighters have said, you know what, hey, love the fans, but kind of like fighting with no fans.
I mean, it's cool, but there's nothing like fighting with fans.
Yeah.
As soon as all my stuff started to pop up on my memories on Facebook, I was like, oh, this is cool. But I miss being able to, like, see people in the back and go take pictures with Shaquille O'Neal and shit. I'm like, yeah, that was fun. Like, I like the win and all, but it's more of the experience that makes it more so. I'm looking forward to hopefully getting back to things like by next June or so.
Man, I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, we can go to, where is it? They're having soccer games already in.
Is that New Zealand?
Yeah. So I'm like, shit, what are we waiting for? New Zealand, like, everyone gets tested and everything. Like, even though it'll be like foreigners coming into their country, we'll all get tested and not as in. Have a fight there and have a whole big soccer arena of people. So, look, I mean, hopefully it's a good look for the rest of the world if America can get our shit together. we're so bickering amongst each other and, like, yeah, we can't get our shit together.
Oh, dude, I was in the grocery store yesterday. The other day, I thought I was going to see a fight because a dude didn't have a mask on. And I'm like, oh, man.
America, don't get me wrong, Americans will team up. We'll team up. You'll join up for Americans and shit. But we also, like, bicker and nonsense. Like, we'll stone each other too. Like, it's like, especially now, you're just like, what the heck? Like, and then it doesn't help. It's election time too, so everyone's fighting over dumb shit. I'm just sitting over there like eating French fries and cheese. Like, y'all are stupid. It's dumb. Like, it happens every time. And now there's a pandemic going on with it, so it's ridiculous.
I will tell you, this has made me realize certain things. Like, now I realize I just need to order the stuff on Target's app and do the drive-up lane. That makes life so easy. I don't even have to go inside. Like, the dog can come with me. We just sit there. They bring it out to me. Scan it. Boom. You're done.
Yeah. It's definitely changed the market for a lot of stuff. Like, there's a lot of things that will never happen again or never be again. Like, businesses that would die. And the thing is, like, everyone's freaking out. I'm like, but that's evolution. Like, man evolves. This was just a really hardcore, fast jump to it. But, like, think about the guy who used to own the railroads, right? And then when cars were coming, you know, like, then planes happened. Like, guy that, like, had, like, a hot air balloon. He's all like, oh, shit. Like, you know what I mean? Think about someone who owned the cassette factory where you make cassettes, and now it's like, or you make CDs. You own the CD company. You were the company supply. All those things, they go extinct. Think about the company that used to work for, like, to make telephones. I mean, like, you used to make, like, payphones, right? That was your company. You guys made payphones, and then within 3 years, your company ceases to exist. This just happened on a rapidly faster thing, so it's kind of like, but like, this is just evolution. We, as humans, I think we've been evolving really rapidly fast as it is. Like, things come and go really fast. Like, Tabo, it's kind of 1 minute is here and it's gone. Like, it's just the way it is.
Dude, I saw a meme the other day, and it said the original Bluetooth, which was a cassette with the skinny wire that you could plug into your phone so you could listen to stuff in your car.
Exactly, and that, like that's, and now you got cars. Like, I mean, like, everything's. I mean, like, look at cell phones. I mean, like, the way the phones. I mean, everything is, it's rapidly changing. And I think, like, I'm telling people all the time, I'm like, don't let coronavirus cripple you. You can adjust. Like, mad people are being very successful with this. A lot of people aren't, but there's also ways to get around stuff. I mean, like, there's ways to get around stuff. You can't let something cripple you. That's just my opinion.
Well, I mean, how much have you had to adjust, Justin, owning a gym?
A whole bunch. I mean, like, it took a whole, I mean, I could have, like I said, I was thinking about closing the gym down, but I didn't. So I'm like, you just adjust on the fly, like, pulling audible. I'm like, shit, like, I'm painting, I can pull audibles. And if you can't pull audibles in life, then you're in for, I mean, like, me as a fighter, I have to pull audibles all the time, so I'm used to it. And some people, like, I think it really hurt the people, like, really are, like, stuck in their ways. Like, not stuck in their ways, just stuck in their routine. And now it's, like, everything's falling apart. And you're just like, oh, shit, what do I do now? And it all different plates of life, too. It doesn't – it's to a certain degree, it is a classism thing, because if you're poor, it definitely – everything when you're poor, it always hurts a lot worse, right? It always – shit goes downhill on the poor people. But, like – in the same sense, this also affected people who were used to, like, living check by check and everything. It did a whole bunch of stuff. So, I mean, I think it's forcing people to become a little wiser on a couple of things and to, like, adjust on the fly.
Of course, we're going to be able to see you adjust on the fly here September the 5th, yes. UFC Fight Night coming up here. As we look forward to seeing your fight, as always, Kama. Appreciate time. Of course, let me know if they can find you on social media. Anything else you want to mention, man?
Oh, man, I just want to say thank you to all the fans for sticking with us and stuff. And thanks to the UFC for continuing us, giving us fights and stuff. Like I said, with all this going on. And you find me on social media, Deathstar_1. That's everything. I just started a fan page. I'm putting a little bit more info into it. I'm so crazy busy. Hit me up. I love talking to my fans. I say this all the time. Don't say no crazy shit, because I say crazy shit back. I'm like, you say some crazy shit, I'm going to say it right back to you. But I love interacting with my fans. I almost hit 10,000 fans. It's pretty cool stuff. But I'll see you guys September 5th.
And there was my conversation with Kama Worthy. You know, one of the things I want to do here on the show is kind of give you some behind-the-scenes stuff of when I'm doing some of these interviews. And a little behind-the-scenes on the Kama Worthy interview is, as we were connecting on Skype, is that he was just finishing up a kid's class at his gym. He recently moved to a new facility, gym owner, and it's been interesting, having conversations with, not just Kama, but other people in the MMA gym business, kind of how things have been, how you've had to adapt to things. And I think we're all learning that of how do we adapt to what we do, in our everyday lives. I've had to adapt here, working a lot at home. I'll tell you, I mean, I've got this nice office, about 25 minutes away from where I live and just outside of downtown St. Petersburg. And I just don't go there a lot. I've really worked primarily at home. And I'll be honest with you, a lot of it is more the reason really is just trying to limit my contact of, trying to, limit who I'm around. And, because last thing I want to do is catch COVID. I now know of 3 people that have had COVID. And, trying to make sure that does not, I do not catch on to it. So been working a lot at home, over the last, it seemed, been really redesigning, this one of the bedrooms in my home, of making it an office / workout room for me and my wife. And, because I haven't gone back to the gym. I haven't, I'm still paying my gym dues, But I just haven't gone back just because, you know, I don't know. I guess a little concerned, I guess you would say, about that. But great conversation I there had with Kama Worthy. Now, our final conversation that you are going to hear is a conversation I had with Cody Brundage, who's going to fight on Tuesday with Dana White's Contender Series. He is going to be taking on William Knight. I got a chance to know Cody probably about, I would say, within like last year and a half or so, fighting up there in the Michigan regional scene, you know, fighting, you know, with Lights Out Championship primarily. Did have two fights with two other promotions, but this is a fighter that, you know, is coming off back-to-back wins against Eric Lozano. The first time they met was for the middleweight title in Lights Out, and then they fought for the 195-pound title as well. And the first time around, it was a unanimous decision win. Second time around, it was a submission win in the first round, but undefeated fighter. You know, obviously, I think when you watch the Contender Series, the story with Cody is going to be that his wife is what you would likely know as Amanda Bobby Cooper. Now it goes by Bobby Brundage. And so I had a chance to talk to Cody. He's had a lot of things change for him over the past couple of months. You know, in this conversation, you're going to hear him talk about moving, you know, initially the plan was not to move to Denver to train at Factory X, was just going to go there for a week. But then he explains how, after having a conversation with Mark Montoya, himself and his wife decided to make the move to Colorado. So huge opportunity coming up here for Tuesday night. So here's my conversation with Cody Brundage. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be a part of Dana White's Contender Series, September the 1st, Cody Brundage. Cody, appreciate the time, man. You know, obviously a lot of changes going on with your life. I guess, you know, there's personal changes, but we'll talk about the professional changes here. Is moving to Colorado, man. What kind of, was it just simply of, as you and everyone around you talked about your career, you just kind of felt that that was the best move?
It was a lot of that. We came out here for a week originally to just train and kind of just learn from other people and just kind of switch things up a little bit just to keep camp fresh a little bit. And then when I got out here, you know, I was taking my licks, you know, going guys like Dustin Jacoby and Anthony Smith and guys like that really showed me, you know, this is how I got to get better. I got to go against these guys and lose and kind of take my lumps and then use that to catch them and use it as motivation almost to get better. So originally I talked to Coach Mark and we wanted to do just camps out here. Me, Colin, Anglin, and my wife, we were like, well, we'll just do camps and then, you know, keep our home base in Michigan, SFS, because we're super close with the people at SFS. You know, they're like family. We've been there our whole career. And it's super tough to just pick your life up and move across the country. But Mark was basically like, you know, it's tough to do that because you're here for an 8-week camp. These guys are putting all their energy and effort into you, getting you ready for your fights, and then you disappear for 3 months. And, you know, it just creates kind of bad vibes, which I totally understood. So then the next thing was like, okay, well, how do we figure out how to get out here? And then within a week, me, my wife, Bobby, and then Colin all kind of figured our stuff out and moved out here. So it was really crazy for the first few weeks. But yeah, it was kind of settled in now.
You know, in terms of you talk about taking your lumps, you know, when you came out there, as that was happening, was it a moment that you had to start reflecting on some things in terms of like, okay, is this like I'm a very big believer that everything happens for a reason. Was there a kind of that moment of like, okay, this is someone's telling me something. Did that all come to your mind?
For sure. I think wrestling in college, you know, when I got recruited to wrestle in college, I went Division II. And when I first got there, I wasn't a very big prospect. I wasn't a very highly touted recruit. But I got in a room with guys that were killers. You know, my school that I was at was a top 10 team in the country consistently. And I knew I could outwork people. I knew no matter what, whether I didn't have the talent or whatever, I would outwork people and I would catch them. And so by my junior, senior year, you know, now I'm one of the best guys on the team. I'm ranked in the top 10 in the country. And I really kind of live by that mindset that if you're the biggest dog in the room, if you're the best guy in the room, you got to find a bigger room because it's the only way to grow. It's the only way to get better. So I knew that coming out here that there were guys that were better. They had more experience. You know, And I wanted that, you know, I kind of was looking for that because I've only been training and fighting MMA for a little under 3 years. You know, I can't be the best guy. I can't be the guy that is winning all the time because I won't ever get better. I won't ever get to the level I want to be at. So, yeah, there was definitely some reflection, but coming here, I knew what it was going to be. I knew that I was going to take my lumps, and I looked forward to that. You know, I embraced that because I know I'm getting better, and I know, like I said, I can outwork anybody. I'll catch them, and it just motivates me to get to that level.
What's the biggest difference you see in yourself now from as a martial artist as opposed to, you know, before making this change?
I think it was funny last night. Me and Bobby were watching like our old sparring videos and old like hitting the pads and stuff. I think I'm just more comfortable as a martial artist. I think before, you know, I was a wrestler that could fight and had power. I think I would call myself more of a mixed martial artist now. I think I feel comfortable wherever it is against anybody because, like I said, coming out here, I'm training with the best guys in the world. So I know, you know, the best in the world. Dustin Jacoby is a multiple-time glory guy who fought for the belt in glory. He's one of the best strikers out there, and I know I can go with that guy. So confidence-wise, I think it was huge to realize, like, I can be successful in different lanes. I don't just have to go out there, take the guy down to win the fight. I can win in multiple ways.
When you get around different coaches, no matter what type of sport we're talking about, everyone's going to have a different coaching philosophy of how they run a practice, how they kind of, you know, work with their athletes. What was the biggest change with you know, Factory X team that was different from what you had been around previously, whether we're talking about wrestling or in your martial arts journey?
So Factory X, it was a change, but it was more back to my roots. There's a lot of structure at Factory X. You know, you're not showing up on time to practice. You're 30 minutes early and you're ready to go and practice starts. No, people aren't missing days. You know, I think a lot of times in MMA, people kind of make their own schedule, and that can be a downfall for a lot of people. And it can be a downfall for their training partners too, because if I'm expecting you to be at practice and you don't show up, now my day can be ruined too. At Factory X, you know, that's not really a thing. You're required to be at this many practices. You're required to be at this many individual sessions. You're required to be at this. And there's just a lot more structure, which really kind of takes me back to how it was in college wrestling. You know, it was laid out my whole day. I'm going to be in class from this to this. I'm going to be at strength and conditioning from this to this, and I'm going to have practice from here to here. And my day was laid out, and I really thrived in that environment. So it was really kind of a good switch for me to have that structure and be held accountable.
And, of course, you got a huge fight coming up here on September the 1st against William Knight. You know, William's been on a developmental deal with the UFC after his fight on the Contender Series. You know, obviously, as you think about William as an opponent, what do you feel that is the biggest challenges he's going to bring you?
I think William's really good. I think we're super similar. I think our fight style is kind of the same. We're both wrestlers. We're both big, strong guys who like to impose our will on people, and we both have power in our hands. So really, it's kind of an interesting fight. Everybody says matchups make fight, but we're pretty much the same guy in our style and our approach to fighting. So it's going to be really interesting to see who kind of can impose their will on the other person. That's going to be the winner of the fight. And I think it'll get, you know, who can push the pace, who can impose their will. Because William, like I said, he's good and he's been there before, which I think is a huge advantage to have being in that environment because it's a different kind of fight. I joke all the time. I think Contender Series is almost like a different sport. You see people go out there and do things that they would never do in a normal fight because the contract's on the line and they got to impress. So he's been in there. He knows kind of what the deal is. It's something that's going to be new for me. So he has an advantage there. But like I said, I think we're super similar fighters. I think, you know, obviously he's super talented. If he's back on Contender, he's 7-1. He's finished all his opponents. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
You know, when you think of a Contender Series, risk versus reward may be something people think about. What's your general thought of in a fight? How do you balance that line of like you're in a fight and you're like, man, I like Tony Kelly a week ago when he's, you know, he's starting to turn the fights around. It's a third round and he decides to jump for the guillotine, take it to the ground. Very risk reward thing. You lock it in, you might win the fight. If you don't, your opponent escapes a choke. Now you're on your back.
Yeah,
so how do you balance that?
I think just staying, I said this, you know, and it's just because I say it, if I go out there and don't do it, don't be surprised. But it's something I've been trying to say to myself this whole camp, is that you got to stay within yourself, especially in an environment like that. You can't go out there and just focus on, oh, I got to do some crazy highlight reel knockout, because one, if you're looking for the knockout, 9 times out of 10, it's not going to happen. And then two, you go out there, gas yourself out. I've seen guys that have great conditioning or are in the best shape, and they go out there and they're gassed going into the second round, and then it's hard to fight. You know, you can't do anything. But guys come outside themselves and they do things they wouldn't normally do. And the thing is, if you don't win, I think there's been one person to ever not win on Contender and get a contract right from the show. And that fight was like the best fight I've ever seen on Contender. I think it was Brandon Davis and Austin Arnett, season one. They both got contracts. But that's the only time that a loser has got a contract. So win first, or else you're definitely not getting the contract. So I got to win. And yeah, you want to be exciting. You got to do things to be exciting, but you got to win first. And like you said, risk versus reward, the whole show's a reward. If you go out there and have a good showing, even if you don't get a contract, I'm 26 years old, I'm 5-0. If I win, I'll be 6-0 with a win over a guy on Contender Series. And in the environment we're in now, where guys are getting caught up on short notice all the time, that's a huge win, you know? They're looking for guys all the time. So I think go out there, have a good performance, stay within inside yourself, and follow your game plan. Don't get crazy. Like I said, that sounds good to say. Who knows what will actually happen when you get in there under the lights, but that's my plan. You know, I'm going to try to stick to that.
Now, is the plan to stay at 205, or is going back to 85 still in the car, in the hand?
I'm definitely planning on going back to 85. That's not to say I would never take a fight at 205, but these 205ers are huge. You know, I'm training with Anthony Smith. He's 6'4". He's got a 78-inch reach. You know, I'm 6 foot, and I got a 72-inch reach, and it's just tough. You know, it's just the length and the reach. You know, it's not that I necessarily feel like the guys are so much stronger or bigger, but it's just the frame. I don't have the frame of a 205er. The reason I took this fight at 205 was that William's like 5'9". He's shorter than me. You know, if William was 6'4", I don't know if I would have taken that or waited for an 85. I make 85 pretty easy. But like I said, I don't mind taking 205 fights, because that as you go up in weight, the athleticism gets a little worse. The pace of the fight is a little worse. So there's definitely trade-offs, but it would have to be the right one for sure.
Of course, we look forward to seeing your fight here September the 1st live on ESPN plus Dana White's Contender Series. Cody, as always, appreciate the time. And, of course, let everyone know anything you find on social media and anything else you want to mention, man.
Yeah, it's just Cody _Brundage_ on Instagram, Cody Brundage MMA Fighter on Facebook. I think Cody Brundage 1 on Twitter. And, yeah, I just want to thank all my coaches, my teammates at Factory X, my wife. You know, she's been huge. She's a great supporter. She really gets what's going on. You know, I'm fortunate that way. And then Landau Sports Performance, you know, they've really helped me with my strength and conditioning out here, Elevation, which isn't easy. I got some sponsors back in Michigan, Heidi and Tim Miller. You know, they've been with me for a long time and they really take care of me. I appreciate those guys.
And there was my conversation with Cody Brundage. I appreciate him taking some time out to talk to me about his fight coming up here on Tuesday night on Dana White's Contender Series. Going to be taking on William Knight. Of course, William Knight has been on a developmental deal for the UFC. Did lose at CFFC 80, a first round loss, but he is coming off a win at CES 60 against Rocky Edwards. And you know, I mentioned about Cody, and I'm guessing it's probably going to come out. I know him and Bobby, his wife, have come out and announced this on social media, but she is pregnant. I'm guessing that will probably be revealed on more of a national stage come up on Tuesday on the Contender Series. So, you know, looking forward to seeing him. And, of course, you know, part of that conversation that you heard there was him talking about the fact of, you know, it's middleweight is ultimately his home. This is a light heavyweight bout. And, you know, mentioned about it was the matchup exactly of why he decided to take that the fight. It was all about the matchup. And, you know, he's a guy that I would imagine when you look at this Contender Series coming up on Tuesday night, you know, especially at middleweight and light heavyweight, to me would be a fight that I would expect that he's got a good chance if he goes out there and gets the win. You know, I'll mention just, you know, and coming up on Monday night on the Fight HQ podcast, myself and P will talk a little bit more about the Contender Series. But the one guy that really, the fight that really interests me on this card is a flyweight matchup. Jimmy Flick and Nate Smith. Nate Smith is someone that I've talked to on several occasions. To me, he is a guy to pay attention to. I think good chance the winner of that fight is going to get signed by the UFC. Ronnie Lawrence is another fighter that is that's going to be interesting to see as well. Of course, it should be noted, Nate Smith was initially supposed to take on JP Buys, but that fight did not take place. So I hope you enjoy this interview edition of the MMA Report podcast, as this the interview edition of the podcast will come out every Sunday, so be on the lookout for that. It's primarily my plan is to record on Sunday mornings, but once football season comes into shape, I will not be able to record on Sunday mornings as doing my work with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. As man, we are 2 weeks from our first game playing in New Orleans. Man, it's football season's here. I'm excited, looking forward to it, and been watching Hard Knocks. Always interested to kind of see how other teams do things that they're, my experience of what I do with Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So looking forward to football season right around the corner. Of course, I'll let you know, coming up this week, you can see I've got a bunch of shows I'll be a part of over at awesomeo.com. I'll be a part of NBA Live Before Lock on Monday. On Tuesday, I will have MLB Live Before Lock. Then on Thursday, I will be a part of the MLB and MMA coverage. And Friday, I'll be a part of the MLB coverage as well. Then, of course, Saturday, I got NASCAR and MMA, as it's always a busy time here in the life of myself. And, of course, coming up on Wednesday, we will have a new edition of the MMA Report podcast. Myself and Daniel Galvan, we will talk about everything going on in the world of MMA. As always, if there's anything you want to hear us talk about, you can... various ways that you can contact me. Twitter is a great way to contact me, at Jason_Floyd. You can send me an email, jason@radioinfluence.com. Or if maybe you want to do it on Instagram, you want to slide into my DMs, it is at Jason_Floyd on Instagram. So I appreciate everyone who takes time to listen to the podcast. That's going to wrap it up for the interview edition of this week's MMA Report podcast for Sunday, August the 30th.